boom now. He goes on the offensive. He goes on the attack over the top of this final climb, and nobody at the moment can go with him.
He had 75 kilometres to go, and now under the Flamme Rouge, there he is still, the virtual Malia Rosa on the road. Who'd have thought it at the start of today? But Chris Froome, masterful performance, takes the win. On top of Sir Jaffra.
Welcome, everybody. Tyler Yonke. Between Two Wheels podcast. We are doing some cycling here because two big races. Look, we started the classic. Everyone's like, oh my God, it's Kern, Brussels, Kern. You know, starting the whole classic season. Yeah, sure. We had the UAE tour. We had a few other tour of Oman. And then these two weeks that we had back to back, well, it was the same week, two races, 1 week races. They are the big kickoff of kind of what you're going to see for the upcoming big grand tours. The big, those kind of riders come out. Now, look, we've had these kind of races. You start to do well at a grand tour. And by the way, hi, Victor. I saw you had commented in here. Thank you. Yeah, we're going to, like I said, we're going to try to do this on Sundays. You've got people back in the history that were potential winners of grand tours. Richie Porte. Bobby Julich, those kind of people win these one week races. The Grand Tour racers win these as well, but these guys are also able to Richie Porte is one, you know, Paris-Nice as an example. And it doesn't always transpond and translate to being able to win Tour de France or a Grand Tour. Sometimes it does. Fox and Sons, coffee. I'm drinking coffee here. 18% or more off of orders of 25. Sorry, 18% off of orders of 25 or more. Go to foxandsons.com. Use the code review, REVIEW, and get your coffee. I do. And this cool mug. They even have this cool mug. Yeah, so these listeners, you're like, oh, I don't hear that. Well, coffee. Yeah, coffee in the afternoon. That's just the way, the kind of day it's been for me. Okay, so look, this season happened. There were transfers in the offseason. The big ones, kind of surprisingly, one of the big ones was Mateo Jorgensen, American. He'd been with first AG2R. I've got his list of teams here. 2015, he was with Hot Tube Cycling, which is a development team in the U.S. They're big time. He was 3 years with them in 15, 16, and 17. Then he signed with Jelly Belly, which is a pro continental team, pretty good team in the U.S., and then he was with Van Rysel, AG2R La Mondiale, which is, you know, AG2R, we've heard about them. And he was with them on the club side, and then he went to World Tour as a trainee in January, part of them in 2019, and then he signed with Movistar. And I didn't know anything much about him. He signed with Movistar for 2021, 22, 23, and now he's got at least a three-year contract with Visma Lisa Bike. Okay. He was a big transfer. He had done some interesting things in Movistar. Remember, he was at the Puy de Dôme stage in the Tour de France. He was up there. Then he gets caught by Woods and Mahorik and one other guy, and he ends up fourth on that stage. He's got a big engine behind him. I think he won the Tour of Oman last year. He gets a lot of these white jerseys because he's only, how old is he? He's 24. So usually those go to 25. And Mateo Jorgensen famously funded his own camps, team camps, everything. And he was doing he said he put his entire salary back into himself, extra of all these experiment, you know, doing altitude, all this stuff, spending all his money to be as good as he can. But this year he had some potential, you know, we'll look back through some of his things. Then he transfers over to Visma Lisa Bike, and everyone's kind of like, hey, this is a big deal. I was kind of like, okay, well, I think it's a good deal for him. I don't know if it's a big deal. That seems a bit much, but probably. I mean, he's consistently been a good climber. He's got a good time trial on him. So possibly. And then they come in and, you know, he lights it up this season on some of the early classics, and you're just like, whoa, okay, I got it. And then he comes into Paris-Nice, and we will talk about that. But I think, first of all, so there's that Paris-Nice coming on, and race to the sun, as they say, because it starts in Paris, comes all the way down to Nice, and it's supposed to be beautiful weather down there in the Mediterranean. And the other one we have is out there in Italy, which is Tirreno Adriatico, another 7-day, 8-day stage race. And so who are the protagonists in all of these? Now, we just had Strada Bianca. Strada Bianca was just dominated by Pogacar, what, attacking 50, 80K, I think, out from the finish, soloing his way in. No big deal. He's looked exceptional. He's not in either one of these races, but you have everyone else. And when I mean everyone else, you have Jonas Vingegaard. He's over in Tirreno Adriatico. You've got Evenepoel and Paris-Nice. You've got, we don't have Sepp Kuss here, but let's talk about the big ones. Then you've got Roglic in Paris-Nice as well. So Evenepoel, Roglic, Vingegaard over in Tirreno. And so then who else? Well, you got Fred Rodriguez. I think he's out here in Paris-Nice. Ayuso's over there in Tirreno Adriatico. Jai Hindley's in Tirreno Adriatico. Bernal's in Paris-Nice. Felix Gall, Ben O'Connor, Joao Almeida. I mean, almost everybody is kind of starting to come into play, but how are they actually doing? And that's the big question. That's what we're going to take a look at there. And so we will take a look. First of all, let's take what we can here and go to Tirreno Adriatico. And I'd say that because I found that one to be the more, boring, race overall. So let's go to the start list here. And I think we talked about this before, but the kind of the riders and even somewhat in hindsight. So, you know, you got the sprinters thing. And look, Philipsen, Caleb Ewing, Bauhaus, Jonathan Milan, those types are all here. So it'll be some decent sprinting. But for the overall situation, Alpecin doesn't have anybody. Jayco doesn't really have anybody. RKBMB doesn't have anybody. Astana doesn't have anybody. Cofidis, nobody. Bora, there you go. Danny Martinez, but Jai Hindley's really the guy here for them with Leonard Kamna. That's kind of their support side there. Over in Decathlon, you do have Ben O'Connor. Larry Warbass is one of his domestiques. Groupama, no one really that you would call here. Carapaz, Nilsson Palace, those are over there. Bedial, Ben Healy for EF Education. Ineos, they have Arensman, they have Pidcock, and that's... Look, so we're getting everybody involved that we're looking for. The Tour de France, Magnus Sheffield, he's also there. Little Trek. Now, when I say Little Trek, should I really say Lil Trek? Tao Gegenhardt. We're still looking for him to come on up. He had an injury, so he got a little bit of a late start. Chris Froome over for Israel Premier Tech. Spoiler alert, he ends up fracturing his scaphoid, I think, in his wrist on a pretty bad crash. Enric Mas, until he was out. Enric Mas for Team Movistar. Q36.5. No one really, we're looking at Bardet. Kevin Vermaaka for Team DSM. Lotto Soudal Quickstep. Julian Alaphilippe. Look, he's still coming off of his drinking problem, according to his team manager. Of course, Vingegaard, and look at this team. Robert Hessing, Steven Kruijswijk, Ben Tulik, Kian Uttebrechts. It'll be interesting to see how he does. He's another big transfer that we had over in the season, coming over to Team Lisa Bike. Attila Valter, Dylan Van Baarle. So they brought a very strong team there to support Jonas. They don't want to have any messing around. Other than that, Team UAE, Ayuso, Mikael Bjerg, Isaac Del Toro, Mark Hirschi, Rafael Mica, Del Toro and Ayuso. Those are the two you're kind of looking at to say, hey, what's going to go on there? Bahrain, Wout Poels, but they really had their team. I mean, Damiano Caruso has done well in top three in the Giro previously, but kind of looking to see where he comes back at it. Okay, so starts on stage one. Ayuso cleans up for everybody. And Vingegaard, I'm kind of disappointing, 22 seconds back here. I think we talked about this last week because I think it had happened on Sunday. A little bit of a boring time trial, but that's the way you started out. And then you started having stage one sprint, won by Jasper Philipsen. So all the sprinters are getting their due. Tim Miller was second. Phil Bauhaus over Jonathan Milan in the second stage there. Stage three, second sprint. Stage four, Jonathan Milan for Little Trek gets his win over Jasper Philipsen. And then we start in on stage five. And I thought maybe we would just break down here with the... We're not going to play the video, but we will play kind of how we do this. Where we just kind of hop some of the scenes here, so you're able to take a look at what's going on. Drop the flag. Nice, decent weather over there. At least a little better than what you had over in France for the Paris-Nice race the whole time. Tyler Yonke, as Victor's saying, what will be your next professional cycling you will extensively cover? So we'll talk about that at the end. Thanks for asking that, Victor. Milan-San Remo is obviously happening. You got some races there in Spain that are going to be very interesting. Sepp Kuss and some of those other are going to. We'll get there. We'll get there. We'll get there to this pre-ride up to ramping up. And then we obviously have the Tour of Flanders. We got Paris-Roubaix. I mean, all the things are coming up. We'll just see what happens each week. So hold your horses here. Okay. 50 kilometers to go. The teams are looking good. You've got team Lisa Bike doing all the work that they can. I don't remember all the extents to this stage because it was, for the most part, they had the two different races going back to back. So I was watching back and forth with him. But with 28.9 kilometers to go, you can see this here, basically 29 kilometers to go. They had a big ramp up climb. They had 5.3 left to the top of the climb, and then it was downhill and whatever to the finish. And you had Vinigo just taken off and never not to be seen again. He puts on, I mean, it was a clinic. He had, who was this up there for him? It looked like it was Kruijswijk, but I don't think it was. I think it was Tuttle. I mean, he just powers away from everybody. And you have Jai Hindley and Ben O'Connor doing their best to try to bring him in. You also had Arensman back here. I think, not sure who the movie star guy is, Sosa perhaps, and Kian Utebroeks on Ayuso's wheel. He was able to kind of hold on there. Now, it was interesting here because you had this going on. You had this Del Toro is off the back completely. And at some point, you can see him here on the UAE side. He catches up to the Ayuso group. Okay. And then he actually goes to work and he does a good job, kind of an amazing job. He's kind of an extension of Almeida, where João Almeida will get dropped and then just power his way to the finish. But this is a little bit more extreme. I tend to think that, let's fix this here. So, oops, not that one. There you go. I tend to think that Del Toro is all about Strava segments. So he gets dropped off to begin with. He starts to climb in the back. He doesn't know where his positioning is. Next thing you know, he just powers his way up through there and he's getting a bunch of KOMs. That's my theory. Okay, 0.4 kilometers. They're already 52 seconds back. Now this group kind of swells, but then you just have the Bain group, basically, with Del Toro really helping out Ayuso, trying to catch, and there's a little bit of a climb up to the finish here, trying to catch Vinigo, but he's got no problems making the way up to the finish. Looks very strong. This group sprints into the finish here, and Jai Hindley takes it off. I think Ayuso ends up clipping him at the line, though. Yeah, Ayuso over Jai Hindley. And there you go. There's the 112 back. For those guys, Arensman et al. Are all in the back there. And Jonas takes over the leader's jersey. So there's the stage results. Let's see if we can get... There you go. The GC, 54 seconds over Ayuso, who would beat him by 20 or so seconds on the time trial, over Jai Hindley. Del Taco, I call him Del Taco, down there in sixth place. The Mexican, looked pretty interesting at Tour Down Under. Kian Utebroeks for Team... This Melissa Bike, he was one of those transfers we talked about. Remember him, kind of an antagonist in the Vuelta when Sepp Kuss won that. But there you go. That's it's done and dusted already. So you're like, okay, well, they do have one more kind of climby stage, and it's already done. And it's in the books. Oh, Gran Camino that we saw Vingegaard basically have two stages or three stages, just killing everybody there. This is that similar. Look, bike. Oh, I don't know why I'm laughing. It's horrible. Bike wrecking all over the ground. It's not so good. There's a break up the road. And I'm just really going to finish off, get up here. I think Carapaz gets up the road. He ends up crashing out today, by the way, pretty hard. 16 kilometers. He's still off the front. And then you've got Jai Hindley's team, the Bora team, coming to the front, but Kruijswijk decides to do what he can do for Vingegaard, and next thing you know, he gets up there, and then Jai Hindley takes off, and we're missing a rider here. I think Vingegaard had already launched his attack. So everyone's just doing what they can to try to get Vingegaard back. There he goes. He's in blue. It's kind of hard to see at this point. He goes. Ayuso goes with him. Jai Hindley is able to go a little bit. And this attack is what's interesting about it. It's about a 20-second extended sprint. And these guys can climb. They can jump. But this momentum and his ability is... It makes you want to go, what? This seems impossible. But he's got pretty big legs, and he's a really small guy, and he's able to really put down the power. This is important because this is what we saw on the tour, Vingegaard, or even Pogacar can do this. We saw this at Strada Bianca where really puts down the power, but then sustains it, doesn't go into the red. Like these guys are like Hindley, you know, has won the, 22 Giro. Ayuso, who's, by the way, is a young guy. He spent, he's a Spanish guy. He spent a lot of time in the in Florida when he was younger. So he spent, his English is like accent free. So I do like him for the fact that it's interviews are really pretty good with him. He you know, talks pretty easily. But Vingegaard just slowly rides. Look at this. Hindley's got a little gap. Ayuso's got a little gap, and then it's gone. But they do a pretty good job of trying to hold him in check. Now, back behind there, Arensman drops off a little bit. Pidcock is able to help. He gets up there. At the end, Pidcock actually has comments about this is one of his best climbs. He's like, I actually had, you know, the feelings today and what I was able to do with Arensman. I think I could have been up there in the front with Vingegaard. Okay, that's pretty strong language, but you weren't. And so we don't necessarily know that. Once again, Del Toro was dropped off the back. But next thing you know, Ayuso's up there in green. He doesn't have Del Toro with him. And he's trying to make the go for it. Or is this Del Toro? I'm trying to remember. One of those guys, basically, he makes his... Oh, there it is. That is Del Toro in the green. He is off the back once again. He makes it up to the group. Then he goes through them with Kianita Brooks. He goes all the way up to his teammate. And there we go. Vingegaard winning on the stage quite easily. What has he got? About 30 seconds or so at the finish here. And Del Toro... I don't think Del Toro actually quite makes it up to those two. Yeah, there he goes. Comes across to finish himself 35 seconds down. But it was pretty interesting because he was well off the back. Pidcock, who was doing a lot of work for his teammate, ends up distancing him at the very end with Ben O'Connor. Arensman comes through. And today we had a stage. Jonathan Milan ends up winning that. And there you go. Vingegaard looking very good and ready for his onslaught at the Tour de France once again. Okay, I'm going to bring up now, we're going to go through here and share the screen and do the same exact thing that we just saw for Paris-Nice. So Olaf Kooi wins stage one for Visma Lisa bike over Mads Pedersen. Pithy, remember Pithy was up there pretty good. Stage two, I think Pithy is also, I think he ends up getting himself in the leader's jersey after this. Arvid Deklein for the Tudor cycling team. Groenewegen in third, Danny Van Poppel, Sam Bennett. So a pretty good smattering of sprinting. Then you had the team time trial. I thought this was very interesting. Brian Zimney had commented about this last week saying, hey, what do you think about it? I actually really liked it, which is basically you get your time coming across the line. Remember, before it's always like the top. You count back to the last fifth rider of the group. That's the time for the team, unless you're behind that and you get your own time. This is... They had a little sprint up to this hill. It was about 20-some seconds or so that took them to get up to the top of it at the finish, where the finish line was. And guys were, you know, kind of leading them out. And it was, it made it more exciting, which is, I'm having a bad team maybe. And at the end, I can really push forward and drop these losers and come through. Or we down to two or three. Now, it didn't work out for a team, as example of Bora. They lost a ton of time. Where are they at here? Not quite the last team. Alpecin's down there. DSM. Little Trek didn't do so good with Skilmos, who won the Tour of Switzerland last year. Groupama, Total Energy, Bora. There we go. They are down 54 seconds. Primoz. They're basically ended up with three riders. They dropped. Haller was their fourth rider. He was 4 minutes back. Bahrain. They had three riders up there. Fred Wright dropped off. He had only a minute down on him. Next team coming in was Cofidis. They looked like they had three, four, five riders at least. Decathlon, one, two, three, four. And then they dropped the fifth rider, Sam Bennett, within losing just a minute. Astana, one, two, three, four. Team Visa Bike, they had Jorgensen, Kelderman, Bowen, Tim van Dijk. Then they started dropping off a little bit. So they came in with basically three riders there at the finish, but they had at least bled them out a little bit better, where you get a minute and a half, a minute and 52, 246, not the 4 minutes that you saw with the Bora riders here, but they dropped them over the middle climb. Ineos, they're coming in with four riders all at the finish, a fifth rider 12 seconds back, a sixth rider 40 seconds, and an eighth rider 128. So, I mean, you're starting to see the better smatterings here. Same with Lotto Soudal. They had rain. They kind of had rain here. It was a different times of rain on for different riders, but it was a little bit worse for like Soudal and UAE. Remco comes in 22 seconds back. Easy Post, they come in 20 seconds back. Team Jayco Alulu, they come in 15 seconds back. And then there's Team UAE Emirates. They ended up dropping Niels Pollitt. He was the first rider to get dropped. He comes in 4 minutes back. Groschnartner at 3:41, but then Soler, Jay Vine, Finn Fisher Black, Brendan McNulty, and Joao Almeida all coming in together with the stage win on the individual time trial, and or the team time trial. I don't really usually go over that, but I thought it was an interesting little display there for them to have. The next day, without really seeing who here, it's pretty nasty climbs, a lot of them, and we have three straight days of climbing. We'll just do kind of the same thing that we just saw before, because I thought it was at least somewhat interesting to go through some of these. So stage four here, there you go, tons of climbing out on the road, and breaks up the road, blah blah blah, we don't care so much about that, we want to get to the finish. But the weather is playing a part here this entire time, okay? And what you saw that was interesting here is, I think this is the first stage, is it this one? Yeah, this is one with Butrago. This one is very interesting for the fact that you had two quick climbs up to the last, you know, 20 some kilometers. And you can see it right here on the screen. It's full screen this year, which is a rider goes up the road, and I think it's Plapp, Australian champion, and Vermaak. I think it's Vermaak. Is that his name? Or Van Welder maybe for Lotto Soudal goes up the road with him. Now Plapp is pretty good time as far as the overall, threat for the leader's jersey. And you're seeing mistakes made all around here this entire race, from at least this point on, from Evenepoel. Okay, this is one of them from his team, which is instead of the guy back there helping him pull, he actually helps this rider Plapp, and they get about 15 seconds up the road or so before the other rider just basically kicks out. There's 8 seconds there, but he ends up, he had a 15 second advantage. He got him up the road, and then the Soudal rider goes back to his team. And what you'd basically done is help the Jayco rider up the road on his own. Now, there was a rider going down here. I think that was David Gaudu. He ends up getting up. I think he fell over just from that. Butrago ends up linking up with Plapp. They have time going over to the top of the climb, and they're not really getting caught. Then they go into the last climb. Now the Soudal team's on the rampage trying to bring him back, but those guys are pretty much gone. And Plapp, they have 35 seconds here. Plapp ends up not being able to hold the wheel of the Bahrain rider, but holds on enough to keep the yellow jersey. In the end, Evenepoel doesn't even really make any strong efforts until, I want to say, like the last 300 meters. You can see him 3:34. He kicks pretty hard, and this is just a real top heavy, steep climb. You got a little distance with, or Jorgensen stays on his wheel to begin with, but then ends up losing just a bit of a gap, with Skillmost going over the top with Evenepoel. In the end, Plapp 10 seconds down, 37 seconds down to Skillmost and Evenepoel. Bernal at 39. You got Gall, Roglic, Mateo Jorgensen, Tejada, and McNulty 46 seconds back. So look at that. Plapp goes into the lead. Butrago's in second. McNulty is up there in third. You got Almeida still, Evenepoel, but Jorgensen down at 52 seconds. So there you go after stage four. Now we're going to go into stage five. Just once again, we're going to keep walking our way through this, and then we're going to a little bit of a conversation about what actually took place. That's one we just talked about, I believe. Okay, so here we go. Stage six. Sorry, we got stage seven, stage eight. A lot of climbing coming in here. Stage six looks a little bit better. You've got leading into the climb, 30 kilometers to go here. You've got Roglic making an attack for Bora. And it kind of lights things up. There's a few climbs still left to go. And a rider goes up there, a UAE rider goes up to him. And then I think it was Jay Vine, I'm not really sure, or maybe it was Bertrago, but they bring him back and it didn't look super strong. And then you had Jorgensen over here. He ends up making an attack up the road. He goes up the road. And next thing you know, the riders are trying to obviously bring that situation back. Evenepoel gets on the front. He's doing work. Bertrago's there. You've got the other UAE riders just sitting in. Skilmos tries to help out a little bit. And next thing you know, Skilmos goes up the road. Brandon McNulty sees that that's a fine thing to do. And he and Skilmos take off. They go up and over the top of the climb. You've got 26 kilometers yet to go. There's only a 7-second gap between McNulty, Jorgensen, and Skilmos. 15 back to the yellow jersey, which is Plap. And you're really looking at Evenepoel. But then Jorgensen does a smart thing here and sits up. Now, this is... Okay, hang on. We got... Then they got ads that are coming through. Sorry, this is the way we have to do it. What you have is interest is the body types here. So, 1 week race, a lot of bad weather. The weather can really take effect into your legs and whatnot. But you've got kind of like steam engines here with McNulty. You've seen him climb. Look, I had watched him out there at the UAE tour. He wins a time trial. Then they go up to Jebel Hafit and he loses a little bit of time in the last 1 kilometer. Didn't quite have the kick that you would hope he would have, at least, to be able to hold onto the jersey. And he loses it to Ben O'Connor and he just didn't quite have that. And then up the last day, I'm trying to remember, was that Green Mountain or which one was that? Another Jebel, something or other. He gets sick and he's not even there able to do anything about it. So, but he's not that kind of climber that he's able to get these punches. And you see that in here today. Jorgensen can punch a little bit better. Skilmos definitely has that. But these guys, they get over the top and now you've got a little descent going on down here. Bertrago gets down, but you've got a little bit of a descent and then you've got this other climb back up and then down to the finish climb up to the finish. And these two guys, being McNulty and Jorgensen, can time trial. They're beasts. So this is made for them. And this gap just keeps going out. And Skilmos helps a little bit. But Jorgensen, by the way, very adept descender. Okay, we're going to see that on multiple stages here. So who's got the big things to lead? Well, you've got McNulty. He's going to be the one that's really in, because he's only, 27 seconds down or so. His team had won the team time trial. He's got the most to win out of this stage. So he's drilling it like crazy. Skilmos is hanging on. Other riders are trying to come back from behind, but they're not really making much inroads. And the benefit you have from this is Skilmos. Okay, he's going to probably, these guys will try to take the stage win, but they're looking for the overall, them being McNulty and Jorgensen. They're going to go get as much time. I think there's 20 some seconds or so between them. There's much more time between Skilmos. They're not as worried. So them being the two big beasts, time trialers, those two, McNulty and Jorgensen, can really just put on the power. And there's no infighting. They're not worried about taking poles. They never missed a pole. And the guys behind, a little bit different. You got Vlasov. You got Roglic in there. But Evenepoel is isolated. Everyone else is isolated. Ben O'Connor actually has another teammate in there. Kelderman's back there, but he's not going to do any work. So they're just all sitting on. And in the end here, come up to the finish, Skilmos is able to jump around them. McNulty, I think, ends up getting the spot over Jorgensen. And then Evenepoel brings it in for the other guys. So there you go. Skilmos, winner of the 2023 Tour de Suisse, ends up getting the win. Skilmos, McNulty in second place, and Jorgensen 52 seconds over Evenepoel, Tejada, Parapente, Gall, Kelderman, Roglic, and Bernal. Quite amazing. So you got the World War One veteran, Brandon McNulty, being the leader of the tour, and very impressive. We'll get into stage seven and then we'll do stage eight and we'll be done. Because what I think is interesting here is some of the more, once again, the team tactics. So going into the 68 kilometers to go, where do I really want to go on this one? Once again, the rain was just horrendous. Guys were having all kinds of trouble. You had Bernal's team, Ineos, for some reason doing a lot of work. Not sure what that was all about. Bora's up there. Not sure what that's all about. Because really, it should be UAE. It should be maybe Visma Lisa Bike. But Bernal, I guess he was feeling like he was got something to go. So 5 kilometers, the team, the group just keeps getting shredded off here. And what you end up having is just Evenepoel trying to do the attacks, but he's not really able to get any distance between himself and Jorgensen. He finally is able to. What happens is Vlasov then attacks up the road. He goes up solo because Roglic is kind of sitting back there, and who was in the middle? I'm not sure who was in the middle, but Brandon McNulty ended up faltering a little bit because you had, here we go. Evenepoel, Roglic, Skilmos, Jorgensen, and one guy just dropping off the back there, but they did end up gapping over McNulty, who had a little bit of trouble, which you're starting to, and by the way, I saw Brandon McNulty at the finish line, little interview that they talked to him, and he did not look well. He was very cold, and that plays a lot into this. Now, he came out of the UAE tour a little sick, so I get that. It's a little bit of problematic stuff. But I, for the most part, I didn't think his team did a disservice for him. They think they did as much as they possibly could. And, Brandon McNulty isn't quite there. Now, some of these punchy climbs, I think he is more of a rider where you're going to benefit from the long sustained climbs. That's my belief, at least. Anyway, Jorgensen looked fabulous. He wasn't, there was nothing coming. He's got a good team. Kellerman's kind of always there when he has needed him. And he's taken the initiative. He's gone up the road. He's attacked. He's putting time in. He's not making any of the mistakes. And the biggest thing is every time Evenepoel is attacking, which, you know, we know Evenepoel from his ability to really, he's kind of like he's like the top four riders, Pogacar, Roglic, Evenepoel, Vingegaard, they all have like a punch to him and a hard, long sustained. So that is interesting to have. And he's got that. And what you've been able to see is, at least in this race, he's not at a level that allows him to do what we saw with Jonas as an example. So he's not able to get rid of our man, Mateo Jorgensen. Coming into today, Mateo Jorgensen lives down by the promenade there in Nice. He's very familiar. He said with all these climbs, the one they went up with yesterday, the Madone, he's like, I train on this all the time. It wasn't a steep one to you. You saw that with Evenepoel trying to get away. And it's like a 5% climb. It's just long slog. I was shocked that that was the one that McNulty had trouble on. He got dropped there. He was fighting for like the last 2 kilometers, really trying, it's coming back in my mind, the last 2 kilometers, really fighting to get on. He ends up losing a little bit. He's got 4 seconds on Jorgensen going into today's stage. I was surprised that was the kind of, because it's a big ring, it's a time trial type of thing, and I just think that the cold and maybe his fitness wasn't quite there. But who is he getting? He's still racing fairly good. Okay, so today's race, phenomenal course set out there. It was only 109 kilometers, so it's pretty short. I mean, it was dangerous, and I'm like, this is, you know, you can see Evenepoel attacking from, you know, 60 kilometers out and just soloing his way in. And the weather was abysmal, as you would expect, as it has been. Victor Campenaerts, he's off the front. They're coming in. There's a time bonus sprint, by the way, at second to last climb up the Col d'Aix, 6, 4, and 2. So that's a big deal because, you know, Jorgensen is only down by 4 seconds. Little Treks, Mads Pedersen's leading the group in here at 47 some kilometers as they hit this. And that's right at 47 kilometers is when Evenepoel makes his first of 3 big attacks on this climb. Immediately on his wheel is Mateo Jorgensen. You can see him there in the young leader's jersey, the white jersey with the vest on. Behind, you've got Skilmos a ways back. I think Brandon McNulty, or at least for this first attack, he was right on board. He didn't have any trouble. Vlasov is there. They kind of separate the field a little bit. And with that, it all comes back together. And then who's going to be taking charge? And this is what was interesting here. The UAE ends up bringing, they had a split in the group, and they had 3 riders still, Jay Vine, I think, Almeida, and maybe Grosschartner, or Grosschartner is actually here, trying to catch up. And Grosschartner comes to the front and just pulls, I think, to try to stop this change of pace. But the problem you have with that is that there's UAE riders that are trying to come up and catch. And so they missed that opportunity of possibly doing this. Plus, I don't know, is it on you, Brandon, to really be doing the work here? But doesn't matter because Evenepoel ends up taking another shot at it. Once again, Jorgensen's right on his wheel. Brandon McNulty, this time, this is the one he had trouble with. This is number three here. There's 43. There was a second one in between he was able to catch on as well. This is the one, though, snaps the rubber band. Who comes up on his wheel but Vlasov? Now, it's happened the day before. Sorry, we removed this here. It has happened the day before. He had a similar situation with Skilmos, and Skilmos ends up jumping his wheel and goes up to the main group up above. And that's exactly what ends up happening here today. With he had Skilmos ends up jumping up the road, getting up to Mateo and Evenepoel. They're coming up to the top of the climb here, and Vlasov hangs in there. But back here you have Roglic, you have Skilmos, and Brandon McNulty. So he has a little bit of help. Bernal's back there and still looking for it, but they immediately put like 50 seconds on, like 59 seconds. This group is just cruising up the road. They got to come up over the Col d'Ise, and in doing so, Brandon McNulty Jorgensen does a lot of work here. Now, I don't know why Evenepoel ends up getting on the front, because he does a lot of pulling on this thing. For me, it's like, look, Jorgensen has no choice. He needs the win. Okay, I mean, he needs to get time over. He hasn't got the time bonuses yet, and he has to get the time over his boy McNulty from behind. So he should be implored to do a lot of the work, and he does a decent amount of it. But Evenepoel does a lot as well. Now, I just think Evenepoel was going at a limit, and he noticed that at sometimes Jorgensen would just come around and take pulls himself, or he would pull beside him, and he's probably like, I don't have the ability. As a matter of fact, I think at this point, I'm not going to get rid of him. And what I am risking is for him to take the stage. Now, a guy of, Evenepoel's stature should probably not really be concerned about that, but that's what it was. Matter of fact, Jorgensen ends up taking the time bonus here, but when they come up the Quatrich Chiemsee, I think that's the climb they're on here, that we're showing here, 10 some to go. Yeah, they end up dropping Vlasov, and Evenepoel actually said afterwards in his interview that he's like, I wasn't able to get rid of, and I know I wasn't going to be able to get rid of Jorgensen, so I rode hard to get rid of Vlasov. Now, they immediately put him not only a lot of trouble, but a pretty good amount of time you'll end up seeing here at the finish. Now, they have to come down into the main part, and I was like, it's a little sketchy because it's still wet. But I will just say Jorgensen, there were times where he was just starting to distance Evenepoel, and it was really looking good. He gives the thumbs up here, coming back down into the last kilometer or so. He ends up taking the lead. And here we go. There's a sprint. Whoops, we missed it. There's a sprint for the finish. And Evenepoel has no problem beating Jorgensen. Jorgensen also does a fist pump. Evenepoel does some sort of phone hang up thing. But Brandon McNulty, due to the fact that Vlasov was up the road, was actually taking his third place, but got dropped. He ends up losing like almost 50 seconds. So McNulty really takes a lot of time back on Vlasov, who just really faltered over that last climb, the Quatrich Chiemsee. And Skilmos comes in. Plap comes out here at the end. You have a bunch of other riders. And there you go. Our boy, Jorgensen, American, top. Evenepoel in second. Brandon McNulty in third. Skilmos in fourth, who rode a great race. Vlasov. Hope there's going to be some sort of like controversy between Vlasov and Roglic now, who is down 5 minutes, 33. He really faltered today. But here we go. Skilmos, Vlasov, Plap, Bernal, Gall, Roglic, Almeida. Woo, that was rough. Okay, we got a little thing here. Brian says, thoughts on Jonas crushing it versus Roglic claiming he's not in the best form until July. That was an interesting thing. Look, I mean, Jonas is just flying right now. We saw that in O Gran Camino. We saw it here in Torino Adriatico. Roglic was not the same. And Roglic is, look, it's his first race. But even being his first race compared to Jonas, I don't read too much into it in March, okay? You've got to have some things going on. These guys are probably going to get sick along the way. They're going to maybe have a crash or two. I think Roglic is one of his big deals, and maybe we'll take a look here at what his race program is coming up, because that to be could be, you know, what is he planning to do? Now, he did say that, look, it's a lot of things going on. Totally new team, new riders, You know, there's problems got going on here, and I'm trying to figure it out. Okay, well, you know, you made this big leap from your team to the others. So he's got coming up here Tour of the Basque Country. Then he does La Flèche Wallonne. He does Liège-Bastogne-Liège, Critérium du Dauphiné, and the Tour de France. So not a big, heavy race schedule coming up. Let's look at Jonas and see what races he's got going. Jonas, Tour of the Basque Country. So we'll have that. We have the Dauphiné and then the Tour. So he's not doing La Flèche or what was the other one that Roglic was doing here? Flèche Wallonne and Liège, Bastogne-Liège. We can take a look at Pogacar. Okay. Did I spell it right? There we go. So he's doing Milan-San Remo, which is what, this next weekend. He's doing Catalunya. So he's at Catalunya, the other two at the Basque Country. Then he does have a Liège, and then he's going to the Giro and then the Tour. So, you know, that whole Giro time, a lot of those riders are not. We just saw with Jonas and Remco. I'm sorry, we'll do Remco too here. Jonas and Pogacar, they're not really doing much. So we're going to have the Basque Country. We're going to have Remco. We're going to have Roglic. We're going to have Vingegaard. And I believe, I think that's where Sepp Kuss is going. I'm trying to remember if Sepp Kuss is going. But anyway, before we peel off of this, Remco is going to Amstel Gold. He's going to Flèche Wallonne, Liège, Critérium du Dauphiné, and Tours. So he's got more races than those other two going up here. But, you know, that could be just, look, I think he was too overdone last year going into the Giro. Sepp Kuss is going to Catalunya. So he's going to be there with Pogacar. He's Catalunya, and then he's at the Basque Country. So he's doing both of those, and then doing the Dauphiné and the Tour. So he's kind of got, it'll be interesting. Okay, that looks solid. I'm liking a lot of that. Let's go to Mateo Jorgensen. How come I don't spell that right? T-T-E-O. There we go. Oh, Jorgensen. There we go. Okay. So his coming up, he's doing E3 Saxo Bank. So he's going kind of classics back and forth here. And then Dwars van Vlaanderen, and then the Flanders, and then Roubaix and Tour de France. Now, I look back, I hadn't seen where he's ever done Roubaix, he being Jorgensen. What is interesting, though, looking at last year, he goes to Oman. He ends up winning that overall. He goes then to Hamlet Het Nieuwsblad. Gets 18th there. Kern-Brussels-Kern gets 65th. Paris-Nice, he ends up with 8th. And that last stage where Pogacar took off, he looked really strong there going into Nice. So that was, you know, makes sense. He was 5th on that stage. E3 Saxo Bank, he was 4th. Flanders, he was 9th. That was an impressive 9th place. Let's take a look here. Let's see if we can get the Pogacar, Vanderpoel, Mads Pedersen, Wout, Paulus, Kung, Askren, Fred Wright, Jorgensen, Mateo Trentin, Van Hooydonk. I mean, Tish. that was a really solid Flanders. And then we know, you know, he went to Romandie, not so hot there. He was second on the GC. I'm sorry, he was pretty hot there. I do remember that. He did it well. And then what was different, he went there well at Romandie and then went to the Dauphiné, and I was thinking he was having a good chance, but he didn't do so good there. He was 63rd there. And then we talked about his Tour de France. Didn't finish, but had his fourth place on the Puy de Dôme. Actually had a better result on this stage, which had some climbing on it too, behind Ian Izaguirre and Matthew Bergodeau. So there you go. So we had it. Here's Brian Zimney. Are you coming out to Land Park this Saturday to do interviews? I should do that. I think Chico was today. And I actually looked, they had a live stream and I went to look at it and then it made you put in a credit card or whatnot. Any new cycling components to see soon, says Victor. Well, this is where Chris would shine into this one. I saw that there was a Taiwanese company coming out with a new shifting component group that was supposed to be well priced. So perhaps we'll get Chris back on the show here and we can take a look at that. Now, there was... What race do we cover extensively? Okay, so that was one that Victor had mentioned. So we've got Milan-San Remo next week, then Tour de Catalunya, then Dauphiné, and then E3 Saxo Bank, Wevelgem, Dwars van Vlaanderen, and then Ronde van Vlaanderen, which is Tour of Flanders, and then the Basque Country, Paris-Roubaix, Amstel Gold. So those are coming up. So next weekend, we've got Milan-San Remo. That's really the one we'll talk about next week. So maybe I'll come out. We'll try to do some interviews at Land Park. Maybe I'll race. It's going a little rough. I had to take a little time off. But and then talk about Milan-San Remo. So because that's going to be the big one next week. And you know, I like that race, but it really, it's what, 200 and some kilometers. It's a real slog, 130 some miles or so. And then it comes down to, here, we could just actually take a look at it. Where is the profile? I'm not seeing it because it's not a stage race. There we go. There's the profile. Okay, so it is 288 kilometers, and you know, it's got this big climb in the middle. It's got the, I should know these, the names, the Cipressa, but then the Poggio that it comes down to, and then it drops down into, and that's the big one. And that's, look, it's kind of a, it's a race where you get up early in the morning and watch it all. Probably won't happen, but I will get up and end up watching it, at least for the last bit, because that's really what you're going to look at. You're going to see the rider. And do you bet against Pogacar? I mean, you know, I love this where you get Pogacar, Vanderpool, maybe a Wout, all coming into there to the finish. And with that, let's, what do we have? The, who won it last year? I should know this off the top of my head. Let's go to 2023. Vanderpool. Yeah. Matthew Vanderpool over, that's right. Filippo Ganna was up there. Wout, Pogacar, Soren Kragh Anderson, Mads Pedersen. They were in the next group. Nilsson Palace, top seven. He did dip out of the, tour. He being, yeah, Nilsson Palace. He dipped out of the Tirreno Adriatico. I guess he had a little bit of knee problems. So not so good. I will say this. So, look, I'm liking more and more Remco Evenepoel. He's not, he needs to learn how to do tactics. And I don't think he complained about some of the tactics. Like I said, we talked about, what, the stage four there, where his teammate went up the road, pulled Plap. And by the way, people who call him Plappy because he's Australian, so you can put a Y at the end and it's like your buddies with him. Stop. That's horrible. That's worse than Angel Lopez, you know, when he nicknamed himself. You're not Australian. You're not in his team. You don't get to call him that. Now, we call G, Garrett Thomas, G, because it's easier than writing, than just saying the whole Garrett Thomas. But I'm not saying G and putting a Y on the end. You're not Australian. Australians do that. I like the Lantern Rouge guys, but Benji, you've got to stop calling him Plappy. He did that a few times. He texted on there. But then what's even maybe worse, the SBS is the podcast that comes out of Australia, and I listen to them. McKenna and this French guy that's in, lives in Australia, and they are Australian, but they consistently call him Plappy. It's not Plappy. It's Plap. It's so frustrating, and I'm annoyed with it, and it's just my cross to bear. But I will say this. Jonas Vingegaard, I go back. I really deviate here. Evenepoel, I like his interviews. Like I said, I think he's wrong with some of his tactics. And he didn't have, if he had Landa as an example, and I know the Landa Rouge guys pointed this out, he would have been in a much different position. Landa is very good at tactics, better at tactics, at least. And so he does help when you've got a rider and you're able to take control. But you didn't have to do some of the stuff you did this week. I think you blew it on stage four with Plap going up the road. Plap. And Butrago went in that stage, and you allowed your teammate drug them 15 seconds up the road before he came back to you, and then it was kind of in a state of shock. You also blew it the next day when Jorgensen and McNulty went. Why didn't you go? I think did you not have the legs? You blamed it on strategy and not being able to do the right thing there. And then today, you know, if you're going to throw it all in, you're going to do it at like 47 kilometers to go. Why are you working with Jorgensen should be doing that work, and you should be attacking him more and not really caring about Vlasov coming over the top and winning the stage. But it's what it is. But I'd like him. I do like him. I like his brashness. I think he says the wrong thing at times. You know, it was interesting to hear the interview with Jorgensen today, and I wish that they would do like they had it and then talk to him tomorrow, and they'd have a full-blown interview tomorrow. And the reason being is because he was so shocked about the overwhelmed. And I think the emotion of winning, he said, my house is right here. I mean, it's right down there. You know, it's pretty cool. I mean, imagine being able to win right there like that, his interview just wasn't it didn't snap, right? And sometimes you're like, you want to take some time away. Now, that time that you take away would do a disservice to Remco because he says what he says and it's fantastic. I'm saying all this because they talked to Jonas the other day after he won the stage, and whoever the announcer guy was asking him a question, asked him about hit the helmet, okay? It was either after the win or before the stage. And he's like, those TT helmets, that's pretty big. Now, what are you going to do? You are Jonas Vingegaard. You're the shit. You've won the tour multiple times now. No, you know, you're the big, big guy out there. You're not going to crap on Giro, who makes this helmet for you. So it's almost a horrible question, right? Because what is he going to say? If he's Remco, or if he, you know, like maybe a Sagan or one of these guys, he might make more of a joke about it, but he's not. He's boring Jonas Vingegaard. I'm taking my wife's name when I get married. Yes, I think he actually did that. That's pretty bad. So that's how boring he is, okay? He's so boring that he thinks he's gonna spice up his life by taking his wife's last name. So with that in mind, he tries to answer this question and you can see he's annoyed and he's just like, well, it's safe. Yeah, no. And the guy's like, yeah, but it's so big. Is it like uncomfortable? And he's like, it's comfortable. It was really, it made me feel awkward and it was pretty good. Okay. Zimney in here. Plapjacks, Lukey Van Ploppel and Luca Plapatelli. Yeah, solid. Plap Armstrong? I don't know. What did we talk about last week? So this was, I just will say last thing here and then we'll be done here. Almost an hour in here. Thanks for joining everybody. You've got, I played that clip last week of, Greg LeMond on with the podcast. Sorry, doing a disservice by not actually saying the name of the podcast. I forgot what it is. I would totally say it. I don't really care. It's some, Irish guy. It's pretty good actually. And he talked about, and I played clips, and I still can't remember, but he talked about Bob Roll trying to, being wired up at the Wheatland Cyclery there in Colorado, Ron Kiefel's shop, wired up to try to get Greg LeMond to say something defamatory against Trek, because there was this lawsuit and this whole issue with Trek and then Armstrong and da-da-da. And I'm just like, what a piece of shit. What a absolute piece of crap Bob Roll is. I mean, that's, and now I've got to watch, and so look, we've got cycling on TV. I'm able to watch on Peacock, you had Paris-Nice, and then on Max, you had the Trent Radradico, and Bob Roll and Christian Vandeveld, sometimes I wonder if they legitimately race bikes. They say the dumbest things, their strategies, their the way that they talk, it blows my mind at times, and it's embarrassing. And they are boring. And I'm going to say that maybe every week that I have to listen to them on TV, I long for the days of Phil Liggett and Paul Sherwin screwing up everyone's names, because at least they do it with an English accent. And with that English accent, I feel like it's not reflected on me and I don't have to listen to it. That's how bad it is. Anthony Walsh. Thank you. He did interview Tyler Hamilton. He's done some good stuff. So there you go. That is my rant for the night. Get back on the bikes, everybody. Really appreciate you joining us here on the, what is this called? Between Two Wheels podcast. And Brian, I will make an effort. Thank you, Victor. Victor says, thanks for live streaming Between Two Wheels podcast. I will make an effort to get out to Land Park next week and do some interviews. We'll talk to you, Brian. I'll give you a big hug or something too. So with that in mind, everybody, have a great week. Take care.